Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay? All right. As she said, my name is Mike Grice, and I am with the Marion County Public Health Department out of Indianapolis. First, I'd like to say that there are no financial relationships involved with this presentation. I'd like to acknowledge the Ryan White Program, the HIV Service Program, and the Marion County Public Health in Indianapolis, for whom I work. Today, my objective is to discuss the outcome of three women who we've worked with in HIV, who are infected with the HIV virus. I've worked with them now since about 2008, so I want to share how we approach this through the Minority AIDS Initiative. This is a group that we formed in 2009 with some of the women that were infected with the HIV virus. We formed this group for a number of reasons. One, we were able to develop social support for the women. Two, they developed friendships. And three, it also became like a family atmosphere, which lasted for years. First, the case number one, I labeled it as bus tickets aren't enough. A 38-year-old African-American female was referred to our program for bus tickets. She had been a victim of domestic violence. Her husband had actually stabbed her and left her for dead once he found out he was HIV positive, even though he knew she was HIV positive during their marriage. She was not in care at this time, so I continued to work with her and set her up to get into the Ryan White program. She was experiencing secondary health problems. Her family did not know how to work with her on those issues. Actually, her family was afraid to touch her. One day during one of our encounters, I was talking with her, and she had a boil under her arm, which had been there for a number of weeks. The boil was so big she could no longer put her arm down. To treat that, her family had put a gauze there and actually used duct tape to hold the gauze in place. So I went in and talked with the family about the need for them to understand how to treat her. And her goal at that time was to get back into education because she was feeling so bad about herself. She wanted to get back into school. So we tried to address this in a number of ways. One, we provided regular one-on-one HIV education on a daily basis. Two, we began an HIV group that she could come to on a weekly basis. Three, I accompanied her to all of her doctor's appointments to help them understand the difference between the different medications and what the doctors were asking of them. Four, we provided education to her family. I actually went in and started doing health education with her family on a weekly basis so they would understand what to fear and what not to fear in dealing with her. Four, we successfully got her reconnected to care. After being reconnected to care, the consumer became adherent on her medications and her viral load was undetectable after a short period of time. She returned to school and was on path to receive her bachelor's degree in May of this year. Case number two, I'd like to point out right here, I want you to notice her face at this time. When I encountered this woman, she's a 26-year-old African-American female. And often when we tell somebody that they're HIV positive, their next response is, I have AIDS and I'm going to die. And so in this case, it was no different. She was diagnosed with being HIV positive in 2008. Her CD4 count at that time was at 266. She admitted to alcohol and crack cocaine use. And I put this way, I want to point out here, most people focus on the crack cocaine, but the alcohol was her biggest problem. And she would often explain that when she started drinking alcohol, that would lead to her smoking crack cocaine. Also with the alcohol, when she drank alcohol, she would forget to take her HIV medications. So we had to focus on those issues. At that time, she was weighing only 106 pounds. You can see how small she is. Her size was a size zero. After our first encounter, during that encounter, she had shared with me, I have AIDS and I'm going to die. But that was not the most powerful statement that she made to me. The most powerful statement she made to me at that time was, I'm 26 years old and I will never be a mother. So I decided to focus on that as my strategy and our approach. We decided to focus on one-on-one HIV education and coaching to help her manage her HIV care. I began to accompany her to all her doctor's appointments because there's so much going on with people who are newly diagnosed and they have to learn how to deal with the medications, the different types of medication, and all the side effects that go along with that. We provided intense treatment adherence coaching. That intense treatment adherence coaching was in regard to her goal to one day be a mother, and also to be able to live with the virus because she thought she was going to die. We provided ongoing support for substance abuse treatment and counseling. So we were able to get her in and out of substance abuse, and it took a few relapses, but she continued to stay with it. Continue with her case. Despite her fears that she would never become a mom, she began to continue to take her medications over this period of time. She stayed adherent on her medications. The client maintained an undetectable viral load for more than 2 years, and that was significant. That was really significant because, as the young people would say, bam, she became pregnant, and she never thought she would be a mother. She went on to deliver a healthy baby boy, and I want to say this, delivering a healthy baby boy, because her viral load had been undetectable for 2 years, her care providing team decided it was okay for her to have her child through natural birth. She did not have to have a C-section. This is her with her child when the child was newly born. The child was also premature, of course, because of her substance use issues. But she continued to go to the hospital every day and check on her child, to be with her child. She would often call me, ask for a ride to the hospital, or sometimes she would call, and she had already been at the hospital for hours seeing her child. So she stayed there with her child until her child was finally released. It was almost 60 days before the child was released from the hospital. Now, the reason why I point out the first picture, you can see her face was so bland and so dull. Now you can see the smile on her face. She's a changed person. Now her weight is up to 139 pounds, which she is very proud of. And as of September of this year, her CD4 count was up to 479, and that had come up from 266. She is very excited to have custody of her child now. She had to go through the courts because of her substance use, but now her child is at home with her. And something so much to celebrate, her and her child celebrated his first birthday last month. And at this time, the child still shows no signs of being HIV positive. So we think that was successful. The next case, I titled it Waiting to Die. I encountered an African-American female who was diagnosed in 1997 with HIV at the age of about 28 years old. 1997, she was diagnosed. However, she continued to live in denial until 2002. In 2002, she was hospitalized with PCP pneumonia. At that time, her CD4 count was as low as 28. She was placed on an HIV regimen at that time. She was also in another state. She remained adherent on her medications until 2004. Her CD4 count had come back up to 388, and her viral load was undetectable. In 2005, for some reason, she began missing medication, missing her appointments. Her viral load began to drop. You can see it had gone down to, her CD4 count, I'm sorry, had gone down to 286. Viral load had actually gone up to more than 35,000. For some reason, in 2006, she was dropped out of care. Her CD4 count, last documented CD4 count at that time was 236, viral load more than 38,000. She remained out of care until 2009. In 2009, I received a phone call from a gentleman who told me he had given a young lady a place to stay, and he believed the young lady had AIDS, and she believed she was going to die if she didn't get any help. So I went over to meet her. When I met her, she was 44 years old, 5'7", was weighing only 87 pounds. After we got her into the hospital and did her first viral load count, CD4 count was down to 7. Viral load count was up to more than 397,000. As you can see here, how very small she was. You can see how the skin was just sagging off of her. Encountering her, she told me she had prayed for three things. She had prayed for somebody to send her an angel to help her. Two, she prayed for medications that would help. Or three, she prayed, let her die if she couldn't get any help. At that time, it touched me very much because I didn't think anybody should be praying to die. So we began to work with her. What I also noticed at the time when I first encountered was her living conditions. If you'll notice here, this was the place that she was staying in, and actually it was not for rent. The guy told her he would rent it to her if she would give her time, but because she was homeless, when he took her in to show it to her, she refused to leave, so he allowed her to stay there. But what I want you to notice here, I circled this. These are black trash bags that she had placed over the windows so no one could see in. She didn't want anybody to see her, but also the black trash bags kept the sunlight from coming in. So the house was always dark and dull and smelled of mildew all the time. And you can see this door here. She stayed in this bedroom, but the door, it was so hard for her to walk from the bedroom to open this door. When she knew we were coming by, she would leave the door cracked. That door was hard to close, so she had to use her shoulder to close it up. Sometimes she was not strong enough to close it up. Also, I want you to notice there's a handrail here, but there's no rail going down. So you can see the steps, how raggedy the steps were. Even though the hospital were giving her bus tickets to be able to come to her hospital appointments were like 8 o'clock in the morning. She had to, one, try to negotiate these steps in her condition, two, catch a bus and ride from the east side of town to the west side of town. It made it extremely difficult for her. Also, in the place she was living, under the counter, the kitchen counter, you can see where there were mice droppings and dead roaches, etc. We got in some people to help clean it up. This is what she was using for a trash can, where she actually had to put Depends because she couldn't make it to the bathroom. So there was human waste in there as well. That was all in there. And because her CD4 count was so low, immune system was so weak, those things were going to kill her if we didn't do something about it. So along with those living conditions, every time I come in, she would be sitting on this love seat here in her bedroom or sleep on that love seat. So I asked her, why didn't she get into the bed? Wouldn't she be more comfortable? She asked me to raise the sheet. When I raised the sheet, she pointed to a hole in the mattress, and she said when she slept on that bed, she could hear the mice running in the mattress as she tried to sleep. So she slept on the love seat there. I did some grocery shopping for her on my own time in the evening. I picked up groceries for her. I brought them into her house. The kitchen cabinets were so high she could not reach them, so I placed the groceries on the kitchen table. I came back the next day. She asked for something, and when I went to get the potato chips, what I noticed was a hole in the bag, and you can see there are mice droppings. Just from the groceries being on the table one night, the mice had got up there and ate a hole into the bag and actually left mice droppings in there. While I was in one session with her, a mouse actually ran across my foot. So I began to place mice traps in the house, and I think this is the one that ran across my foot. I hope it is. He's no longer around, all right? So our strategy was to deal with her housing condition because I wanted to meet her, what was her biggest need as far as she was concerned. So we collaborated with an agency called Partners in Housing. We got her into new housing. She was not in care, so we did get her back into through the Ryan White Service back into care, and I did begin to accompany her to all her medical visits. She had very poor nutrition at that time. Doctors decided to place her on a feeding tube. She was physically debilitated. I collaborated with a case manager to get in a podiatrist and receive physical therapy. This is the new housing that she was able to get into. You can see it's much cleaner and no mice and anything involved, so she was very comfortable with that. This is a picture of her after one of her hospital stays. She was probably up to about 89 pounds, maybe 90 pounds, but still unable to eat. You can see how very small she was. So the decision was made to place her on a feeding tube. This is actually one of the tubes that was removed because we had trouble with this tube clogging up. They put in a shorter tube into her stomach. After I signed on to be her health care giver, I worked with the home nursing, and they showed me how to crush up her HIV medications and to draw them up into syringe and actually inject them into that feeding tube so she would get her medications every day. After that, I would connect this feeding tube to her at 7 o'clock every evening, and she would be on that feeding tube until 10 o'clock the next morning. And I would use my lunch hour early to go over and disconnect the feeding tube from her. You can see the wound that was left from her being on the feeding tube for more than 2 years. You can see there was drainage there. However, as of now, the wound has completely healed and there's no more drainage. Also, while I was working with her, and this was kind of shocking to me because she had been in and out of the hospital on a number of occasions, but no one had noticed her feet. And if you can notice here how long the toenails are and how rough the feet were. So, and this is a toenail here that actually grown up. She was trying to put socks on and shoes on every day. So we worked with her to get into that. We brought in a podiatrist who took care of that. This is significant here because when I took this picture of her and showed her that picture, she did not recognize herself. She had not looked at herself for more than 2 years in a mirror. And that when she began to gain weight. She also had a relapse in December, and we had to put her back in the hospital. However, December of the next year, she was home in her own apartment. She was eating regularly and got up to 130 pounds. And you can see here, she's also receiving help on how to walk again. This is her standing at her stove, the first time she was able to stand and cook for herself in over 3 years. This is her negotiating the steps, learning how to walk again. And this is her the first time I took her grocery shopping. That cart was loaded with ice cream and cookies and all kind of yeah. Okay, this is her in her apartment in 2012. She was able to decorate her own Christmas tree and take care of herself again. Her viral load has remained undetectable for more than a year, and as of October this year, her CD4 count had come from 7 all the way back up to 211. This is the friendship that they developed when the other patient was going through her prenatal care. She accompanied her, and this is them as somewhat of a family. lessons learned from this was meet consumers where they are at, learn how consumers are living in the conditions that they're living in, be cognizant of the stigma, especially in minority communities. When we look at stigma, it is sometimes described as an imaginary stain that we see on a human being, a stain that is caused by dishonorable conduct. So some people will not tell anybody they have HIV. Some consumers prefer to be referred to as a person living with advanced HIV instead of somebody living with AIDS. Avoid using such terms as you are suffering from depression. Consumers also think they're crazy if you use the word depression. So we dealing with our healthcare providers, we just started using the term, asking her if she was taking her mood swing medications, mood swings instead of depression. So she was able to deal with that much better. And I also say learn and listen from our consumers. I share with my consumers that I am not HIV positive. Therefore, I am listening and learning from how they learn to live with HIV. Thank you.